Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
We give a couple more minutes for folks to join. Just posted the meeting notes, Google Doc. Hart couldn't make it, and looks like Mick said he'll join half hour past not 9:30. So all right, so maybe we should get started. Just a quick reminder that the antitrust policy notice is on top of our meetings page. The boilerplate warning that we should follow that policy. The first thing that I had on the agenda is just to wrap up any comments that we put the last call out. Sorry, Greg, thanks for the reminder. I was supposed to do that earlier, and my bad, I put it out only last week, but it looks like we got a few comments. Maybe we could kind of look at that and close that out to see what we want to deal with it.
Yeah, I think it's just a small number that we should talk about.
Okay.
I connected earlier this week and went through and cleared up the ones that we thought were, pretty straightforward. So if folks have the document open, I think the first one is at the bottom of page 7. It has to do with this question of explicit dependencies versus implicit dependencies, and the question is, do we want to be opinionated or indicate that we have an opinion about whether you know, it is part of the Hyperledger architecture vision that, you know, we only encourage explicit dependencies. And we felt that that was one that ought to be discussed in this body and, you know, agreed to before we closed out that comment.
Stan, I think you had done that section, right? So
Yep. So I think this is more of a, like, really what stance are we, do we want to take? And I personally think we should not be necessarily suggesting that one approach is better than the other. I think we've been talking that this is more of a survey that we're doing and pointing out that different architectures may, different implementations may take different architectural choices and design choices based on the specific requirements. And here we're just kind of being explicit in that this is the range and these are the, you know, benefits of this. And I don't think we've necessarily talked about what would be the benefits of implicit transaction dependencies, but again, I think that this is good as is, but then, and again, this is more of an, like, what is the stance that we want to take with the paper? Be more prescriptive or descriptive?
Yeah, so I guess we are, in some sense, we are talking about the pros and cons of implicit versus explicit here already, right? So with implicit dependencies, cycles may be difficult or impossible to resolve, which can prevent certain transactions. So I guess Bahua's question is, you know, and we should probably get mixed input, because I'm as far as I know, Sawtooth is the only one which has some notion of dependencies, and they do support implicit dependencies in the platform, correct? Does anybody else know specifics of that? I know they do support.
They parallelize the work using dependency graph.
Right.
Obviously, that means that they're only able to run things in parallel that are not dependent.
Right, but they analyze, so Sawtooth is different in the way that they analyze both implicit and explicit, and just explicit are kind of easy to figure out, right, to decide whether or not you have the ability to parallelize. With implicit, there's more logic that's needed. So the Fabrics read-write sets, I guess, in a way that is an explicit dependency specification. So implicit is more of a, like, a Bitcoin style, which I'm not sure how Iroha or Burrow do this. But I think both Fabric and Sawtooth do explicit. Well, and Sawtooth also allows implicit. So again, I think pros and cons have been kind of described.
Yeah, I guess the word impossible to resolve is like a strong word there, right? Which kind of says, you know, do you want to have a method which has, you know, something that has potential problems is what it flags in my mind when I read that, which then begs the question that Bahua is asking, right?
But then why do you need to resolve them, right? Because if you have absolute order and you do not wish to parallelize, then they will be resolved by just virtue of applying the transactions. Again, kind of like the way Bitcoin does it. Just unless you
mean UTXO?
Yeah. Well, it's a specific way of using UTXO.
Can you explain that a little better?
So,
I mean,
when you specify the UTXO, you can have, it's perfectly valid in Bitcoin to have multiple transactions using the same UTXO, right? And the way their suggested mechanism of picking one over the other is going to be the one with the higher fee. Because otherwise...
You're talking about the mempool and then how you would resolve, replace transaction by fee kind of thing.
Right.
Where you know, if the transaction is not settling in a certain period of time, that then you could replace transaction by fee, and then hopefully the higher fee will trigger the transaction to be included in the block.
That's right. So because that is the dependency, right? UTXO is quite by its nature is the dependency, creates the dependency graph, right? So
yes.
It's a matter of like how you utilize it within the system.
Okay. But in a sense, you know, it can also be because you're trying to fool the system by double spend.
Absolutely. So for
but in any sense, the final, the transaction joining the block will only happen once, you know, one of the UTXOs, if they are duplicates, will be picked based on certain algorithms, whatever.
And that becomes the dependency resolution, because whatever block that everybody is committed, whatever block was mined and committed by the network, that resolves the next, you know, set of transaction dependencies, right? That creates the new set of UTXOs, which become dependencies for the following transactions. But that is specific to Nakamoto consensus and all the, it's a very tightly tangled system. But all the Hyperledger projects, and especially Sawtooth and Fabric, are highly modular. So they allow different interpretation of different constructs for different designs. Like the same as with the way they use implicit versus explicit. It's a choice that you make when you build your transaction. So again, this is more about the choice and the design decisions than prescribing what's a better way. And we are saying that doing explicit transaction dependencies specifying allows for parallel execution. If you don't want to have parallel execution, well then you don't need to bother with explicit transaction dependencies, because that could add complications in adding the mechanisms of actually creating this graph, these explicit dependencies, referencing them.
So I just made a couple of suggestions to make that explicit just calling out that in parallel again and just make it complex instead of impossible. And I guess the question remains, should we also in the second part make a parallel execution for make something that leans towards what Bahua was suggesting, which is, you know, be a little bit more prescriptive in our verbiage on the second sentence.
Having a difficulty thinking on the spot, but maybe we can
explicit, can allow for parallel execution.
I don't think we should change our stance to prescriptive at all, because that has not been our modus operandi so far. So why should we?
I know.
I mean, as long as you point out, not impossible, but you know, like you said, complex or difficult. Just say difficult to resolve. I mean, forget the word, all those other things.
Yeah, I think the way I originally phrased it, difficult to impossible, was to cover the range. If we don't want to make it impossible, then it's just difficult, I guess.
Okay.
Or complex.
Yeah, instead of dancing around this thing.
Okay. Great. Cool. Well, we can let that sink in while we, you know, talk about some of these other ones. But I'd be happy to kind of respond back with the consensus agreement here that you know, that the purpose of these papers has not been to be you know, where multiple approaches are valid, to not be, you know, overly prescriptive. And, you know, however, we have tried to tighten up the language to address his question.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, great, thank you. All right, moving on. Okay, so if the next comment here is at the bottom of page 9. So basically what Bawa is pointing out is that it would be great if, you know, the way that the various frameworks protect against a DOS attack could be spelled out in each of the respective sections. So I sort of pointed in that way. And then hoped that would be good enough, and he reopened it, I think, you know, perfectly appropriately, saying, yeah, but it isn't really in there. And so I think this is a little bit of the way that I sort of am seeing this one is, you know, if we think about this paper sort of as a software release, right, we're trying to get to 1.0, and I guess the question for the group is, how big a quote unquote bug is the fact that the various sections that talk about how the different Hyperledger frameworks approach smart contracts, how big a bug is it that those sections do not explicitly include a description of how each of the frameworks cover DOS and protecting against it? If it's a mission critical bug, like this paper is going to crash if we publish without it, then, you know, then that would, I think, lead us down one path. If we feel like, yes, it would be nice if they included it, but, you know, but it is not mission critical, then I think that leads us down a different path. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it, but what do the rest of you think?
Yeah, I think it's fine. Let's solicit their input, and you know, as soon as we get it, we can update it. These are meant to be living docs, so you know, it's not like you know, our intent was to keep updating them as needed, and you know, I don't see a big problem in putting it out without that.
Okay, great. That's what I was hoping to hear, but I didn't know how important you all felt it was, so. Cool.
Anyone else with thoughts?
I would agree. I mean, the intent was to kind of give architecture work groups overview of what are the, you know, the modules, components, features, and you know, just concerns on building smart contracts, and then each project added their section with their view, but we didn't necessarily outline that they have to address every single point that we made. It would be helpful, as Greg pointed out, but I think we can kind of leave that as been set for the next iteration.
The paper is not going to crash and burn, that's for sure.
Okay. Great. Terrific. Okay. So Stan, you have a comment on the bottom of page 12, pseudo. I can sort of vouch as a technology marketer, but not an engineer, that concept makes perfect sense to me, but it's a valid point. So, I'll leave it up to the group to decide whether that term needs some additional definition.
Yeah, my thing was it kind of was out of in a slightly different tone, because pseudo is I'll defer to other members in the group, like how common of a term that is, which I felt that the rest of it was fairly high level description. And then this was almost referring to specific Linux command. So I felt that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stan.
Yeah, maybe you can say privileged mode or privileged level or something like that. All right, let's just do it right now.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
All right. Cool, we're almost there. I think there's one more, or maybe that's, one more. And this one, it might be one that we need Mick for, so maybe we move on to other business and then pick this back up when he joins. But if others feel like they can speak to this. We're on page 19 at the very top. Sean's wondering if the section about smart contracts with other transaction families should go before Seth. I sort of see that as being an editorial decision for the Sawtooth team, but.
It sounds reasonable. You can just run it by Mick and say, because Seth is probably the second version of that that they added. So maybe describe the generic mechanism makes sense to me, but should have Mick weigh in. Sean had also privately said that they're working on a new version he was wondering whether we should describe that in here as well. But looks, what I told him was, hey, this is a living doc, proposed text, and he'd be happy to include it. So whenever it's appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. An additional reason why I think that's the right thing to do is because that's the feedback that we provided to a member of another project community who wanted to include something about some functionality that would be coming soon. We wanted to keep this to sort of, current supported sort of available functionality. But as you said, update with new functionality as it emerges. That was one of the comments. I think it was Chris Ferris who said something about EVM support kind of coming soon in Fabric. And we thought that, we'll certainly include that when it's available.
Yep.
Okay, well, great. Well, we are so close we can taste it. Thanks everyone so much for all the work on this.
And Thank you, Greg, for taking us to the finish line.
Well, you know, I have the easiest job, but you know, it's sometimes it's that last mile can be the hardest. So I'm very happy to work with you all on this. So I'll put myself on mute and I'll be in the background here tidying up this aspect about implicit and explicit dependencies. And you know, whenever Mick joins, if we want to revisit this, we can do that. And if we run out of time, I can follow up with him directly.
Sounds good. So the now that the first topic is off, I wanted to kind of open up the agenda to kind of see, you know, the default would be to go and look at the system identities paper, but I want to first ask, you know, what are the other items that, you know, you think we should also look at? Let me post a link to the system identities. Paper. Any other agenda topics that folks had for today?
I had one question. Not necessarily part of the agenda, but we keep talking about the papers as the living documents. Have we figured out what is the flow or cadence maybe for doing these updates?
That's a good question. You know, we've been kind of reactive so far. I think Todd Little from Oracle had some input on the consensus paper that he wanted to discuss, and we kind of said, okay, let's bring that back, put some comments in the Google Doc version, and let's resurface it. But we haven't kind of actively revisited it. My first preference is to do a full pass through all the different sections we've identified in the outline paper before going and revisiting them. But if there is, I'm happy to kind of leave it reactive if someone has an issue that they want to bring up that we should fix till that point. But I'm open to, you know, the group's suggestions.
Another way is to have, you know, put it on GitHub or something, and then have then you have a real version trail, and then do PRs, and so you can have more than two people agreeing, kind of like maintainers. I think that is the approach that is being taken by Hart.
Yes, but that involves going to tech and, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, converting this to tech may be painful.
Yes. It actually slowed my contribution to the white paper, frankly.
Yeah, but if you are, if you're going to have, only, you know, not as many edits, especially to preserve the
versioning.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean we could check in PDFs in GitHub just for the versioning. And there is versioning in Google Docs. If you go and look at history, but it's not obviously as sophisticated as Git.
Well, the concern with checking in PDFs is how do you generate them? I mean, not everybody's going to have Acrobat, right, or whatever the tool authoring tool. Because the actual official PDF document has really nice formatting, some pictures and stuff, which is all difficult to author into it with tech and without special tools. So maybe less accessible to folks?
To author, you mean? Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure that the Google Doc for the paper is actually available. So the link that is there on the wiki, it's actually for the PDF mm-hmm. version. The Google Doc that was, I guess, the source for that first volume, I had to dig through my history of Google Docs to find that it's not really available on the wiki.
Really, if it's not, let's fix it. Because that was something Todd had requested. Let's see, where's the wiki? Oh, I put in a link in the working drafts section in the wiki.
That seems okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I guess that's a fairly new edition, right?
Yeah. This was in response to Todd's request.
Okay, great. Okay.
And that was, a couple of months back, maybe.
Perfect.
So I assume this one as well, we will leave the draft version here. And then when it's published, there'll be a published PDF that we'll put in the publications section. And, we can keep the Google Doc version as the place where people can submit comments and so forth, even if it doesn't look as pretty as the PDF.
Sounds good.
So going back to the frequency, do we want to explicitly go back and have a review section of these, or shall we be reactive to folks' input?
In general, I probably want it to be reactive, but I think of it from perspective of the new people coming into the Hyperledger ecosystem, and as they go mm-hmm. to these papers, if they're really out of date, maybe misleading sometimes for them to go through them, because it doesn't. They do include sections. First one and the upcoming paper include section on the sections and actual implementations, mm-hmm. and how different projects actually use these.
At least the project, we should have the project teams kind of review them periodically, especially when they support. I don't think anybody's added a new consensus since the paper was published, right?
Well, the question is, so for example, Fabric is working on adding a BFT version. I don't think there was anything about that. So whether...
I think there was a note that said it can be more added, and whenever they add it and release it, then we can solicit their input to kind of update that section.
Yeah.
If you're asking about new consensus, I know that the Sawtooth guys are working on making some additions to their work as well.
Hey, Mick. Welcome.
Hey, Mick.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we were just talking about, what's the cadence in which we should update the published docs. And I was suggesting we could be reactive. And perhaps solicit whenever you're mocking yourself as being late. yes, we'll call you out.
Anyway, so probably lacking any drastic new additions, we can just stick to a reactive approach, and then because we'll probably made aware when the new consensus algorithms, new modules become available, so we can request individual projects probably to update their section in the paper.
And I took and just labeled the named the version that we had out there for the consensus paper as release one, so that we know kind of where that existed, and then we can name them as we kind of release additional versions of them.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah.
Mick, I think a couple of questions on the smart contract paper that maybe we were looking to your input on. One was, I think Sean had a suggestion to kind of move the general transaction family description up before set in the paper. Does it make sense? Just wanted to make sure.
Since
you contributed that.
How far down are we? I mean,
it's on page 19, Mick.
Okay.
Top of the page.
Does Google actually let me see what page I'm on?
Well, we've got page numbers.
When I'm looking at the Google Doc.
As you scroll, okay, it should tell you the page number too.
There it is. You got to hover over the scroll bar in order to see the page number. Well, in general, I would strongly encourage us to move the transaction family discussion ahead of Seth. Seth happens to be one of the transaction families, and so the more general concept is the transaction family. So.
Okay, cool. I will do that.
And the other discussion we had was... Go ahead.
Ram. I just wanted to know that the title of that says installed smart contracts with other transaction families. I'm wondering if other makes sense if we move it before Seth.
I would drop the installed smart contracts with other transaction families and just say transaction families. Or installing smart contracts with transaction families, drop the other.
Okay.
Or drop installed and drop others. So smart transactions with, or smart contracts with transaction families.
Yeah, I think the installed was left because in the introduction it says it supports both types of smart contracts on chain and installed. So I think if we leave installed and then just drop other, I think that's probably would then match the introduction of this particular section. And maybe in that introduction sentence, we flip the words installed and on-chain so that it matches kind of the order that we're going to put them in.
Makes sense. If that was Sean's only comment, we're doing well.
And the other thing that changed that we made where we were trying to reword the implicit versus explicit dependencies, and I knew that Sawtooth is the one that's just doing some kind of implicit dependencies. So I think so far we just pointed out that when you have cyclic dependencies that gets complex, and that's where the current verbiage is. And Bahua was suggesting should we be prescriptive about it? So,
Sawtooth has
get your thoughts on
Sawtooth that. Sawtooth has explicit dependencies that you can actually put in explicit dependencies between transactions, which forces a particular ordering. So it's not just implicit, but it's also explicit. And the explicit dependencies is powerful in the sense that it ensures if you have separated your ordering and contract facilities, it ensures that the ordering facility knows what the contract facility is expecting for ordering and transactions.
Okay. So we decided not to be to go ahead and recommend just explicit or implicit for parallel execution or anything, just to lay out the pros and cons, just to close the loop on that. But
that is that part's Mick, if you wanted to look at the comment and the edits, is at the bottom of page 7.
I like the text that's there. Is there anything you're suggesting I'm changing?
No, we've made a few edits, and then Bawa had asked if the previous sentence used to say cycles may be difficult or impossible to resolve,
complex is fine.
Yeah, and then the other thing that we did was Ram added in validated in parallel, right? They'll be validated, they just won't be validated in parallel if you do the implicit route.
There are other issues with implicit, and that's largely because of if you're isolating ordering from contract execution, then the ordering service may attempt to apply transactions or may attempt to order transactions differently than what the contract expected them to be ordered. So having explicit dependencies provides hints for the ordering service as to how it should propose an ordering.
And
Fabric, you can't modify the same state in Fabric in the same block because it can't resolve what order multiple updates, the ordering service can't resolve what order those updates were performed.
So this is quite a different take, Stan, from...
Well, but the, yeah, I guess...
What's written here is also true, but the other part of this and the reason why we use explicit ordering in the private data objects work is... because it gives us a way of making sure that the ordering service is not screwing up the ordering that we expect it to use.
But so your hints are wrong?
Transactions.
What if your hints are wrong?
Well, given that the contract is the one that came up with the hint in order to provide it, that would be a terribly bad thing to happen. And your bad contract got bad behavior. And so that's exactly what you would expect. The
hints are put there by the contract, explicit. Yeah. I mean, the contract inserts the hints.
Yeah, or your contract engine. But yes.
Okay, so there's like a two-pass thing.
No. What it means is that I can execute multiple contract or multiple updates.
I understand that.
Contract engine, and the contract engine can say, these six or these n updates, I perform them in this operation. Ordering service, make sure that you order them in that order as well.
Okay.
Well, got it. There's a little bit of complexity there, right? Because you might be executing smart contracts in different orders in different peers or nodes, right?
Right, and then the ordering service will obviously reject those because it can't do both.
Right.
So everything worked exactly like it was supposed to work. If you get a double spend, you want the double spend caught. But if you don't have a double spend, you'd like to accelerate the performance as much as you can.
So when you say implicit there, you're saying that it wasn't called out by any client.
No. I'm saying we use explicit. Explicit is powerful. Implicit is leads to disaster, has the potential of leading to disaster, and is causing huge performance penalties on dependent updates, for example, in Fabric.
When you say explicit, can you kind of talk about what you mean by explicit? Who's explicit?
Don't commit this transaction. Don't commit this transaction until that transaction is committed.
And who's making that claim? Is it the client or the smart contract?
The contract. So if I'm updating the state of a database and I go from state 1 to state 2 to state 3 over 3 transactions, and those transactions update the same field in state. In Fabric right now, you can only commit one of those per block because you can't guarantee that those 3 transactions are going to be ordered because there's no way for the contract to say, I perform these things in this order, so you should make sure that you use that order.
But they do have versions, right? They just chose not to allow chaining of the transactions.
There are many reasons why it was done the way it was done. And some of them are rational and some of them are...
the opposite word.
Some were for expedience and some were for rationality. How's that?
But in general, I want to make sure that, I guess I'm clear, is that my understanding was that the read-write set in Fabric is in a way explicit transaction dependency.
It's not a dependency on transactions, dependency on data, right? It's a scoping function.
Yeah, the
basically says that this modification only the read and write set basically says, so long as nobody else has modified this read set, transactions can occur in parallel. What the explicit dependencies allow you to do is to say, even though these 3 transactions modified the same stuff, I know that they come up with the same result because I took the output from one as the input to the next, and the output from that one as the input to the next one.
They include versions, which is, in a way, creates this ability. Yeah, they do not generate the new version
until
it's committed.
The order, exactly. So you have a little bit of problems with that because of the way the rest of it's architected. There's no reason why they couldn't put the explicit dependencies in. They just happen.
Maybe they will if it starts having very negative consequences on throughput.
Well, I mean, you can look at some of the guides that they have right now, even for how to accelerate the performance of some of these things. For independent updates, it works just fine, right? So if you've got multiple transactions that are updating different parts of the state, but if, for example, you're incrementing a counter, there are some techniques that are described in a couple of the IBM docs. I think they're IBM. They may actually be in the Hyperledger stuff, but there are a couple of the docs that describe techniques for how you can take a counter that you could increment through and actually do that. Do the implementation that allows you to do independence. So for example, if you have a counter that you're incrementing as a result of a transaction, then you can only currently commit one of those per block, one increment per block. And so there's some techniques for essentially creating a log, a monotonically increasing log of those transactions, and then you don't compute the value of the counter, you just compute the composition of those. And that's the technique that they use right now in order to accelerate that. And all we're saying is, look, explicit dependencies get you around that or allow you to write an ordering service that would get you around that.
I guess in a previous discussion, which you missed, I kind of conflated the data dependency with transaction dependencies.
Yeah, those are not the same thing. They have there's a relationship between them, but they're not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
So I guess great discussion. The question is, does that change anything that needs to go in the doc?
I mean, looking at the text in those in the last two or three paragraphs, they look fine to me.
Okay. And we want to call out anything about this discussion in the paper?
I think it becomes this at this level, I think it's fine.
Okay.
To explain it, you're going to have to go into a different level of detail, and it's not appropriate for this paper.
That's my gut feel as well. Agreed.
Right. I think it's a critical aspect, because part of our inability to use Fabric for some of our work right now is because the ordering surface can't do what we want it to do. So.
Give me an example. What is
I've got two invocations on a contract. I have two methods that I'm setting in to invoke on a contract, and the client and the contract and everybody else knows that those two have to occur in order, but I can't tell the ordering service to do it. So I have to slow down the execution of the contract and the commits of the contract based on the commits of the block. So.
Got it. All right.
Is there a way to dynamically change the size of the block?
I don't know. We haven't gone into that level of detail. We've just kind of looked at what we could express through the transaction interfaces, and it just, we couldn't find a way to do it. So.
Well, if you can do that, then of course you set the block size to 1 for those.
That's exactly it. You set the block size to something ridiculously small and you do the commits more. And you know, the question then becomes, well, is it easier for us to fix, to make sure that we do that for the ordering service from IBM, or do we just go grab FastBFT or something else that already does a nice job of ordering on it? Sawtooth gives us what we want. It's because of the weight of the validators, it's a bit of a challenge to use Sawtooth, but at least the ordering pieces of it work. Sorry, that was a total digression. leave the text as it is and let's go on.
Cool. Sounds good. So we were just talking about ambitiously, I was thinking we could get started on the identity, the ledger system identity, the few sections that are still left, but we are almost out of time today. But perhaps instead of doing that, should just maybe get a readout on what's going on in the privacy track, as well as just talk about what are the next items that we want to prioritize in the next meetings.
So on the privacy track, I think we're making some pretty good progress. There's been a very interesting discussion around the kind of ideal model. So we took Pippin's kind of factor bidding on purchase orders, and have been expanding that into kind of the ideal model that preserves the privacy. It's opened up a number of different discussions, and not the least of which is we seem to be converging on two different forms of model. One which is more sort of separated groups of peers with explicit channels between those groups of peers. And so you end up with sort of a hierarchy or a graph of these sort of trusted oracles, or the sort of traditional blockchain approach where you end up with a centralized oracle. And there are both performance and privacy impacts for both of the approaches. So it's kind of interesting.
I'll be talking to the Monato guy, which, basically Standard posted a link. Apparently, they have implemented factoring in production in India, and they use Fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to find out from the guy, exactly how he goes about dealing with some of these privacy issues. Maybe mm-hmm. he'll tell me, maybe he won't. I don't know.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, because I know that one of the things we got to last Friday was just that observation that there's a point at which we really need the application and usage level to give us the feedback about what's the right decision to make as far as the ideal model goes. You know, what are really the requirements here? Some of them are pretty obvious, right? You know, you shouldn't be able to deduce who's bidding on a particular contract. But some of them are a little bit more interesting about how we do that. So.
Yeah. So it'll be during Synchronize, which is on April 19th.
Mm-hmm. What is on April 19th? So sorry,
Monatogo person who has implemented the factoring, I think he's the CEO of Monatogo, will be present during Synchronize April 19th. And that, you know, that is a specific implementation of this factoring problem, which we have been sort of talking about in the privacy and security working group. So hopefully he'll share something with me about exactly what they did. Otherwise, you know, we'll find out through other means.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. So before we close, just wanted to get, we want to probably drive the completion of that identity paper. I don't know. I haven't plugged into what the Quilt group is working on, but we have this whole topic of interoperability that we've kind of teed up as one, some of the things we want to tackle. What are the other topics in our list that we want to go after? And of course, Brian threw up, you know, do we want to be a little bit more proactive and in our original goal of convergence?
Convergence.
Let's take it one step at a time. Any other agenda topics, preferences for what the next thing to deal? We have the identity paper, which has a few subsections left. And then we have items like interoperability that folks were interested in. What is your sense of what are the next item we want to be looking on besides the identity services? Oh, we are, of course, policy was very closely tied to identity that we haven't discussed yet. Thoughts?
That in the list that was included, we had communication was the next one. Or was that just
communication?
Somewhat random order.
Yeah, communication was there as well, right? And let's see, where are we on the top? Consensus, smart contract, communication. Yeah, that's a fairly simple one. Data store abstraction, crypto abstraction, that's the crypto library stuff, I'm assuming. Identity services, policies, API, interoperation. Thoughts, comments?
I do know I have to head off to my next meeting.
All right.
So.
Sounds good. Yeah, we will continue the conversation in 2 weeks. If you have any thoughts, comments about the next items that we should look at besides identity, please send them out in the meantime.
Okay.
Thanks, folks. Glad we were able to kind of, you know, with Greg's help, finish up this paper. Let's kind of wrap up the identity section and continue the momentum here.
Yeah. So I'll next steps, I'll get this over to our designer for layout, and she'll probably do a little bit of polish on some of the images, and I'll you know, communicate with everyone on, you know, the sort of expected publication date, and, you know, process where it'll live on the website and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Yes, of course.
Thanks all. Let's start here. Later.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.